The Daily Connect podcast, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
Welcome to the Daily Connect podcast for Friday, the 31st of August. Chris Wallace with you on the podcast today, and what a show we have in store for you as we are getting all musical in our forum this week. We are joined by not one but two presenters of A Little Alternative, David Hogg and Sam Little, who will be discussing accessibility at gigs and how their different visual impairments have affected their musical passions. We're also getting quizzical on the show today. Do you love tuning into quizzes on the telly? Well, maybe you would like to chat to Nikki Coburn. She is telling Lynn Morgan what it means to be a quizzer, as Nikki was recently on Make Me an Egghead and has really developed a passion for quizzing. We'll also hear some personal experiences that writer Amy Bethan Evans came up against this year at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. And as it's Friday, a special guest brings us something for the weekend. Your ultimate guide to what's coming up this weekend on TV, in the cinema, at the theatre, and also what new music is released this weekend. So that's what's on the Daily Connect today.
The Daily Connect podcast.
But before we get to all that, we want you to tell us what you want RNIB's priorities to be going forward. You don't want to miss out on their latest survey, as it's one of RNIB's most important. It will directly affect the future of what we do. Now, this survey closes on the 6th of September, so make sure you get involved and be a part of the future of RNIB. Costa Aspero is here to tell us about this survey and also what else is happening in campaigns around RNIB this week.
RNIB is increasingly focused on removing barriers that blind and partially sighted people face to participate equally in society, but we need to hear which barriers cause the biggest challenges. This information will be really important to tell us where to concentrate RNIB's efforts and precious resources. So if you're blind or partially sighted, we're asking you to complete a survey to give your views on the barriers that have the greatest impact on your life. Is getting around the biggest barrier employment opportunities or something else? The survey can be completed online or over the phone. If you give us a call, a team member will take your details and you'll get a call back in a few days to complete the survey. The survey is open until the 6th of September, so please don't miss this opportunity to give us your views. Speaking of barriers which blind and partially sighted people face on a daily basis, we know that dockless bikes are now becoming more of a problem. So I'm joined here by our London Regional Campaigns Officer, Karishma Shah. Can you tell us what dockless bikes are and why they're causing a problem for blind and partially sighted people?
Yes, of course. As the name suggests, people can hire them out through an app and they are located through GPS and geofencing. But the problem with them is because they're not docked on normally other bikes that you can hire out. They normally have fixed docking stations, but with dockless bikes, the whole idea around them is so that you can basically dock them anywhere, and people tend to dump them anywhere and everywhere. And for blind and partially sighted people, it's an issue because we don't know where exactly bikes will be parked and they're just so random. So yes, you know, they are like any pavement obstacles, bins, pavement parking. So yes, they cause a similar threat, and sometimes people have to walk on the road again just to avoid the obstacle. So yeah.
So what should be done about this issue?
Well, quite a lot at the moment can be done. We're getting companies to take a little bit more responsibility. So, for example, when people report that a bike is causing an obstruction, that it needs to either be removed within 2 hours if it's a danger, or within 24 hours. And then we're trying to get local authorities to issue fixed penalty notices when bikes are parked irresponsibly. And we're asking the bike companies as well to get permission from local authorities before putting these bikes out and work with local communities, disabled and elderly people, so that they can kind of best minimise the impacts of dockless bikes.
You mentioned there about local authorities taking action, and I suppose just like other street obstacles, they have powers under the Highways Act to remove obstructions on the pavement, don't they?
Yes, that's correct. So if you do find a bike that's causing an obstruction, you can either call or email the bike operating company, or you could tweet us at RNIB_campaigns.
So Karishma, obviously you're working in London, but are you aware of where these bikes are a problem across the country? Is it just in London or is it other areas as well?
Well, yes, they're growing in numbers in other areas as well. In London, they're becoming an issue. In Manchester as well recently, like Oxford. But some local authorities, they're quite good and they're very strict on the type of bikes they want in their areas, but other places are not. So if we can do something about it now before it's too late, then kind of express our concerns about the issue they cause to blind and partially sighted people.
Listeners might remember we recently supported an inquiry by the All-Party Parliamentary Group on eye health and visual impairment. This inquiry was on capacity issues in NHS England eye clinics, which are leading to people losing some sight due to cancelled and delayed appointments. A report was produced which made a series of recommendations that, if implemented, could address this problem. So Helen Lee, RNIB Policy and Campaigns Manager for Eye Health, is here with us to update us on progress with the campaign.
Thanks, Costa. So we're doing quite a lot of work with NHS England and with the Department of Health and Social Care to encourage them to ensure the recommendations are implemented. But I also wanted to just to give you a flavour of a couple of other pieces of work we're doing, which I think will be of interest to listeners. As you might have heard, the NHS has been tasked with developing a 10-year plan with additional funding from the government and is looking at how services can be integrated across health and social care. We're working with organisations like Age UK to ensure that eye health and the needs of blind and partially sighted people are included in the future plans of the NHS. We're also working with NHS England around their review of services for people who need artificial eyes. And if any listeners use these services, we'd really like to hear from you. We would like to get your views and your experiences of what works well and what doesn't work so well with services, so we can feed that into the review process. We had the All-Party Parliamentary Group includes people from, as it says on the tin, all parties, which is really good news. We also had an expert advisory group that involved people from across the eye care sector. So patient organisations and patients from the Macular Society, from IGA, and of course from RNIB. And then people also working in health services, so from the Royal College of Ophthalmologists and the College of Optometrists. So we had a really concerted effort to identify solutions to increase capacity and ensuring patients get their appointments on time. The next stage of the work is all about making sure that these recommendations are implemented, and that's what we're doing. And again, we're taking a united approach. We're very aware that if we have one voice across the eye care sector, we're much more likely to be able to influence the government and the NHS. What we're trying to do is look at how we can work in partnership to ensure that eye care gets higher up the NHS agenda. And we're thinking particularly around working with organisations like Age UK around the needs of older people, but also looking at some of the other issues that have interest across the NHS. So, for example, long-term conditions. And we're trying to fit our agenda, our eye health agenda, in with these other priority issues, because alone it probably won't get the support, but when we show how it's linked to the really big issues the NHS is having to tackle, then we're more likely to secure support. Eye health is relevant for people of all ages, as is sight loss. But some of the big issues like glaucoma and wet AMD, we now have some really great treatments. But the critical issue is that the treatments need to be given at the right time to prevent avoidable sight loss. So that's why the capacity issue in our eye services is so critical.
A lot of people who are taking action locally are people who are blind and partially sighted, and it's important that people are able to speak up and let us know what's important to them. Well, if you'd like to get involved with campaigning, we have some great resources to help you, and we can put you in touch with your local regional campaigns officer, like Karishma for London. Just visit rnib.org.uk/campaigns, call our campaigns hotline on 0207 391 2123 or email campaigns@rnib.org.uk.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The Daily Connect
podcast. Do you love tuning into quizzes on the telly? Maybe a contestant gets something wrong and you often think, come on now, I could answer that. Well, Lynn Morgan has been chatting to Nikki Coburn about what it means to be a quizzer, as Nikki was recently on Make Me an Egghead and has really developed a bug for quizzing.
I met Nikki Coburn recently, who told me about how she has continued participating in quizzes after reaching the semi-finals of Make Me an Egghead.
Since I did Make Me an Egghead, I just got the quizzing bug even more because I came that close to getting my dream job of becoming a professional quizzer. And someone told me that they have something called Quiz in the North. And I thought, oh, well, I don't really want to go, because I'd heard from other quizzers that sometimes when you're with other professional quizzers, they can be a bit competitive. And, you know, they sort of said, oh, they've all got big egos and very different views on different things. So I decided in the December, I said to Mum, well, look, we'll go along and we'll just see what it's like. And I went along, and as soon as I went in, someone came up and they said, oh, excuse me, is that James? And I said, yeah. And they said, oh, we saw him on Make Me an Egghead. So, and, you know, they were lovely. And a lot of them who do Quiz in the North are sort of very, very good quizzers. You know, they've done 15 to 1, Brain of Britain, all the top ones, Mastermind. And it was just so nice to be among them. And as I went to more and more, you know, more people came up and started chatting and said, oh, I saw you on Make Me an Egghead, or are you going to do any other quizzes?
Explain to me then what happens at Quiz in the North. What, you know, what's the sort of setup there?
They have an individual quiz and you get a certain amount of time. I think it's an hour and a half to answer 150 questions. Now, the first time we did it, my poor darling mum had to read it out. And it's very tricky because you've got to read out all these names of, you know, people and scientific names and things like that. And there was a guy called Mark who ran it. And I wasn't very sure of myself. And I kept saying things like, I don't know, it might be such and such. And he said, yeah, that's it. And I said, for another one, I said, I don't know, I'm just going to say such and such. And I wasn't convicted enough in my feelings to sort of say, oh, it's such and such. Mm. There's about 50 people that go, between 30 and 50. And I said to Mark, because Mum had to read out the questions to me, I said, can I be on my own? Because I was conscious of the fact that I didn't want to disturb everyone else. Mm. So they always find a different room for me to sit in. And after that, they put you in a team quiz. And the very, very first team quiz I was in, the captain was Anne Hegarty from The Chase. So I was absolutely starstruck. And I thought, oh, gosh, no, Anne Hegarty's actually sitting on my left-hand side. I mean, I was starstruck enough when I met the Eggheads. But Anne's quite a formidable quizzer, and I thought she was going to be a bit mean. But in real life, she's an absolute delight. And they had some picture questions and all different types of questions. And one of them was, what was the sitcom where Gwen Taylor played such and such in the 90s? And I said, I don't know anything about it. I said, but I know she was in one called Barbara. And Anne said, well, we'll put that down. And it was right. And then they said, who used to present Big Brother's Big Mouth, I think it was called. And I said, well, again, I never used to watch it, but Russell Brand did one. And that was right. And so, you know, Anne was quite impressed that I managed to get those right. And then we have another one called the Rally Quiz, and that's where you have to answer 100 questions in as quick a time as you can. But they're marginally easier than the 150 questions.
Mm. And what happens at the end then? They just sort of tot up all your scores, do they? Or?
They do, yeah, and they publish them on the website. They only read out the top 10. And then I've got a friend here in Cardiff called Gareth, and he does what they call Grand Prix, which is like Quiz in the North, but much harder, very, very difficult questions. And he said, why don't you go to one? And I said, oh, no, they're not for people like me. I don't do that. Because I always come in the bottom 10 in Quiz in the North and the bottom 3 for the Grand Prix, because the Grand Prix questions are much harder.
Really? So tell us about that. Where's that held?
That's held all over the country. We've had some in Cardiff, sort of like satellite venues. They hold about 4 or 5 venues on the first Saturday of each month. And I've been to Coventry, I've been to Northampton as well. And the lady and gentleman who actually won it are fantastic. The lady has been a scribe for me on two occasions. And we play this game called Pick a City or Pick a Country, because sometimes I'm reading so fast and I don't have time to really think. So she puts a star next to it and she says, right, name me an Asian country, name me a capital city in Africa. And sometimes I've been lucky and it's been right. But they're difficult in that they're split up into sections. So there's lifestyle section, there's world civilizations. But, I mean, they can't be any more accommodating than they have. They've been absolutely fantastic. Loads of people still come up to us now and say, oh, hi, it's Brian, how are you? And, you know, they helped me get lunch. They've taken me to the train station. And, you know, again, I'm always in the bottom three. But I always think if you're not good at something, then it makes you stick at it. I think if you're good at something, you can be complacent. And I am the only blind person that sort of does most of them. There are a lot of other blind quizzes around and they're very, very good. But I'm sort of mostly the only person there. And I think a lot of people might have thought, oh, she'll just be around for a few. And then, you know, because she's not doing very well, she'll probably give up on it. But I'm exactly the opposite. And it's amazing how much knowledge you accumulate over the years. I've got what I call a study folder, and I'll put loads of different things in, and something will come up and I'll say to Mum, well, that was in my study folder.
What are your hopes, what are your dreams for this, Nikki? Or is it just something that you're just enjoying for the moment?
I think it's something for the first time that I can do on a par with everybody else, where all I need is a brain and a mouth. And, you know, yeah, everyone else is better, but they are all in their 50s, you know, they're all in sort of their late 50s or 60s, or, you know, late 40s. A lot of them are younger than me. But I said to Mum, Kevin Ashman and the Chasers and all that, they didn't really take off until they were in their 50s. And I think, you know, my ultimate goal is to try and go on Make Me Naked Again if they ever do it, maybe do Brain of Britain, something like that, because it's just such fun and it's so accessible for anyone.
So where will you be popping off to next? Have you any idea?
I think there might be one in Cardiff in July. They've also got the World Quizzing Championships and I think the British one is in September. Now, I wouldn't ever do the British one yet. And I have filmed 15 to 1, so I'm waiting for that to be on the telly, because you're not allowed to apply for any more TV quizzes until that's been on. It's very frustrating.
Will they let you know?
They will, yeah. But it's just because they don't want people saying, oh, you know, oh, Mary from Lancaster was on the Tipping Point and the Chase on the same day.
It is very popular, isn't it?
It is. And you do get the usual suspects that come round again. I listen to Brain of Britain on Radio 4 and I always get excited when I know people from the quizzing circuit that are on. A lad who is round about the same level that I am, he actually won his Brain of Britain round the other day. So I was very happy because he was up against, you know, some fantastic quizzes. And it's just whether you know the answers, and it's also, they always talk about your gut instinct, and a lot of the time I've thought, goodness, is it that? And then the worst thing you can do is veer off course. Your brain goes, actually, well, it might be such and such.
So always go with your first
nine suggest? Times out of ten, yeah, because, you know, either you've heard it or you've been told it, or, you know, you've sort of and read the papers, they always say as well.
The Daily Connect podcast.
This year marks RNIB's 150th anniversary. To celebrate, we've been asking the blind and partially sighted community for their stories and experiences of sight loss. We will be sharing these stories over the coming months to document the changes we've seen in the last 150 years. Today is the turn of Ali Prince, who says, I've been regularly attending live music shows since I was a teenager. The venues range from grand halls to damp, dark cellars. To be honest, I've always preferred the cellars. The only problem is, I can't see in the dark. Over the years, all venues have changed a lot when it comes to accessibility. It's not just the fact virtually all of them allow my guide, carer, to go free and give me concession rates. Most importantly, it's the change in attitudes of the people who work there. People at the venues really are great. The ticket officers try their hardest to sort the best seats. We're often let in early to get settled. They let us use the stage door or whatever is easiest, arrange seats at standing events, get us drinks, the list goes on. Above all else, they treat us naturally, not as if we're a drag. They help make it fun. I love live music. If you're interested in sharing your story, please complete the submission at www.rnib.org.uk/150stories.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
A Little Alternative is on RNIB Connect Radio every Friday night at 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 7. It has had two hosts in its 4 years, Sam Little and David Hogg, and has recently celebrated its 150th show. Now, those hosts have been sitting down together for this week's forum to talk about bands, gigs, and how their different visual impairments have affected their musical passions. In part one of this conversation, Sam and David are discussing accessibility at concerts, how it frustrates them to feel grateful to staff when they do even the littlest thing for them, and the difficulties in getting a photo ID when you're blind or partially sighted.
Hi, my name is Sam Little and I work at the BBC as a production management assistant on The Social.
Hi, I'm David Hogg and I'm currently a journalism student at Edinburgh Napier University.
I have Usher syndrome type 2, which consists of hearing impairment and retinitis pigmentosa. Essentially, I have no peripheral vision. I suffer from really bad depth perception, sensory awareness, night vision, and depending on how dark it is and how well I know a place, how tired I am affects the quality of my senses.
And I suffer from nystagmus, which pretty much means that my eyes shake about in my head. I also have no lower field vision, which pretty much means if you put a piece of paper at your neck and try and look at your feet, that's what I can see.
That's a really good way of describing it. Yeah. I was feeling like it's a bit of a competition.
Yeah.
What can't you see? Well, I can't see
Who's blinder? When I first came in and was talking to Jill, she said, "So how blind are you?" And I just looked at it and went, "Just enough to get away with it."
Yeah.
So you and I, we both attend a fair whack of concerts.
It's one way of describing
it. A fair whack. What's been your favourite gig that you've been to?
I can't answer that question, David. Don't answer.
I know. I've got about three or four.
I think there's a few that's springing to mind, and I've been thinking about this. So one of them, actually quite recently, was in 2015, and it was Fleetwood Mac at the Hydro. And I was a latecomer to Fleetwood Mac through my husband. I mean, I knew the classics.
Yeah.
But I didn't really get into them until we started dating about 8 years ago. I just became so emotionally invested in them. So
yeah.
When I got to see them, I saw them with my husband. It was on his birthday. The Hydro was a fantastic venue. Christine McVie was playing with them. Stevie Nicks was dancing in all her glory. And it was such an amazing experience. I cried. I screamed. I laughed.
Yeah.
I may have had a little bit to drink, but it was a wonderful experience. Then to flip that on its back, that Oliver Arnold gig we spoke about earlier, that's definitely up there.
I can imagine.
Muse, I saw at the Aberdeen Exhibition Centre when I was 17. They are phenomenal. It was when they released the Supermassive Black Hole album.
Okay.
And I remember Matt Bellamy had this really cool panel, and like a distortion panel, and it lights up and kind of dances around, and there was just so much intense energy, and it was like the first proper moshy gig we went to. Remember, me and my friend got squished between these huge, hairy, sweaty men. It was just a really, really cool experience. But then another amazing experience, completely opposite to that, another Icelandic band, Sigur Rós. I saw them at the Hydro Connect Festival in Loch Fyne in 2008. Ooh. And I remember it was outside and they had a string quartet, they had a brass band, the sun was setting, it was all like pink,
really beautiful, idyllic.
I was dancing in the mud in my wellies and I'm such a massive fan. Yeah. I've seen them a second time since in a very different venue at the Brixton Academy in London.
Wow.
So I can't say I have a favourite, but I have so many wonderful different memories of going to gigs. What about yourself?
My first proper gig, to use that dreadful cliche, was a band called Mayday Parade, who they're one of these pop punk bands out of America. Great, still love their music. That first gig was at the Queen Margaret Union, and it was really small. It's great. And I found that the best gigs have been in small venues.
Yeah, the more intimate size venues.
Yeah.
I think from an accessibility point, I prefer those gigs.
Yeah, I mean, the best gig that I've been to, certainly recently, was The Main in King Tut's. The Main were doing a headline tour So I did my usual, got my mum to phone up the venue and say, my son's coming to the gig tonight, he's registered blind, what can you do? I had to go down to the door and ask for the manager. So he let me in, and I'm in during sound check. So me just sitting, chatting to the support bands, one of which was brilliant, a band called Night Riots, you know. I was talking to them beforehand and just saying, oh, I'm the host of a radio show and I played you on my show last week. Please love me.
So, how come you got in at the sound check? Because you were registered blind?
Yeah, because I was registered blind. It was just to
get in before everybody else.
And I was in way before everybody else. But no, that was a really good show. But like, as far as big venues, my first proper, this is a huge gig, was Biffy Clyro at the Hydro last November.
Wow.
And they were great.
So how did you find that gig from an accessibility point of view, though?
So, again, we phoned up the Hydro and they pretty much went, nope, stand in line with everybody, like everybody else. There's nothing we can do.
Really?
Yeah.
And do you use a cane?
No.
When you go out and about?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I'd be too frightened that I'd hit people with it. Which I certainly would.
It's amazing how you learn when to control your impulses and when not to.
Get out of the way! No, so I got on Twitter and sent a few angry tweets, and Biffy Clyro's tour manager got in touch with me.
Oh,
a lovely man called Neil. I ended up with three doors from the front.
Nice.
And they were absolutely brilliant.
And do you find you see better closer to
yeah.
the stage? Okay,
yeah.
So you need to be right at the front.
Yeah. Although I don't like being at the barrier.
No.
Just because you're not in the atmosphere.
No, you're almost just like looking up into it, aren't you?
Yeah.
But
three or four rows back when you can get enough of the atmosphere.
That's interesting. With a venue like that, you had to go to the lengths of tweeting about it in order for someone to give you the assistance or facilitate the gig in a way so that you can enjoy it. I mean, I've had lots of different experiences. I mean, I'm usually going with someone. So
yeah, I'm the same.
And I prefer to be further back, so there's actually nothing really that a venue can do for me.
Mm-hmm.
But often I wouldn't take my cane with me because I'm like, oh, I'm going with a husband or a friend, so I'll just hold on to them. But in the last year or so, I've been taking my cane with me because I've needed to.
Yeah.
And the first time that I saw the perks of disclosing your accessibility requirements at gig was Sigur Rós at Brixton Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my friend were just standing in the queue and I had my cane. And one of the staff came over and said, oh, come with us.
Wow.
And this massive queue. So the guy cut us through at the front of the queue, could completely skip the queue, and then we got taken up into a special section. It was great because it was at the side of the auditorium. And you had your own bar, your own toilet, there were seats.
Wow.
But then there was also a barrier so you could lean over and have a look. And it was fantastic. Oh. It was so good. Because it was a massive venue, like the Brixton Academy, they had the capacity to do that.
Yep.
Barrowland is really good. From an accessibility point of view, the staff are incredible.
Really,
you know, they make sure you've got access to the toilet. They'll take you to the toilet and they'll get you in. I went to see Lorde at the O2 Academy. We got put in reserve seating and I hadn't phoned up ahead or hadn't. They just saw me with a cane and they saw that we were struggling. We were trying to find out the best level to be on for my sight. And they said, look, we've got reserve seating here, just sit here. And anytime I need the toilet to save my friend having to wrestle with the crowd, this massive security guard took my hand and dragged me all the way to the toilet. And then because I had forgotten my radar key.
Oh, I don't have one of them yet.
I recently discovered radar keys and they are amazing.
Yeah.
So you get in touch with Disability Rights UK, go online, and I think it's about £4.50, and you get this big, long, heavy blue key and it's got a heart-shaped handle. And I think it's pretty good for especially gig venues,
mm-hmm.
but most public places. It means you can access them. So in reality, I probably could have just gone to the toilet every time on my own if I'd had this key, but because I didn't, the security guy needed to take me. So I think the more gigs I go to, the more I learn about what's available, what support there is. And I think in the bigger cities and the bigger venues, apart from your Hydro experience, which I'm really surprised at, it can be quite good, but you need to let them know.
Yeah.
You need to give them notice. I've just been really lucky that I've turned up all the time.
Yeah, the first time that I used what I now call hashtag blind perks was when I was seeing the 1975...
Oh!
for
the... I love that band. Oh, I'm so jealous.
Right, it's the first time I saw them. I've seen them three times.
Oh my god.
First time I saw them at the O2 Academy, I had a seated ticket.
A seated ticket,
which no use. I'm not going to be able to see.
Yeah.
So I just chanced my arm and said to one of the security guards, "Look, I'm registered blind. Is there any way you could get me into standing?"
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, "Oh, we'll hold you in the foyer and we'll see if there's anybody willing to swap tickets." I just got a tap on the shoulder from the manager of the venue, just saying, "Oh, yeah." And you go,
"Amazing."
So, yeah, it was a great show. And they played my favourite song, and they haven't done since.
Oh, what song's that?
Paris, from their new record.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
I think the industry is slowly getting better.
Yep.
And I think with the wonders of social media, you know, bands do care that all of their fans and people who listen to music
can
along, whether you're in a wheelchair or you can't see properly or you can't hear properly. You know, it's important that you get the chance to experience it. And I always get annoyed at myself because I'm always so grateful and so gracious when they put these things in place, but actually it should be part and parcel.
Yeah.
It should be standard procedure.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm really annoyed when they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm just a big grump.
Well, no,
probably.
No, because you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
they should.
I think you can't, you know, venues, companies, bands, if people don't know, they don't know.
Yeah.
So it's our job to educate and raise awareness.
That's it.
You know, so if you go along and say, so for example, your seated ticket, you could argue that when you are buying a ticket, you ring up the ticket provider and say, "Look, I'm registered blind. Can I have a standing ticket instead?"
Mm-hmm.
But how easy is it to do that? Are the ticket companies set up to receive those kind of calls? Is it actually easier just to turn up to gig
and
rely on
the,
you know, the manager being
a good egg?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I also think for young visually impaired people is more, I feel like more and more visually impaired people are going out doing things. I feel like people are much more empowered to do those things.
That's it.
So the more young visually impaired people who go out to these gigs, the more that we are seen to be attending to them,
mm-hmm.
I feel like the more that venues will be facilitated.
That's
for
it.
Us.
It's a cycle.
Exactly. So what we're trying to say, guys, is you need to get out and go to those live gigs.
Yes, go and see things.
So we get more perks and we can enjoy them without having to stress about finding the queue or finding a good spot or being able to go to the toilet and all those things.
And then there's always the stressful thing of, right, do I just go down to the front now or do I go to the bar first?
Yes.
Is it really?
But I think everybody has that problem, David.
Yes.
I don't think that's just a blind person's problem. The problem is finding somebody to go and get your drink for you.
See, that's it. I got ID'd in the O2 ABC and I only had my Young Scot card on me. So luckily I knew someone who was there who I hadn't seen in ages. I went, right, great to see you. Go and get me a drink.
I know. That's another thing. It's not very related to this, but I guess it is because you need your ID when you go out to gigs if you want to have a drink. And also just to get into gigs is getting a form of ID that isn't your passport.
Yep.
Because when I was younger, I used to carry my passport around everywhere with me because I obviously didn't have a driver's license.
Yep.
I've lost my passport twice, so now I don't. And it was fine because the Young Scot bus passes had the holographic pass ID on it and it had your birthday.
Yeah, mine's
see, when you turn 26, David, that
a
goes
long
away.
Way. Yeah, I know. And there's some places that don't even take the Young Scot card, even though it's got the holographic thing. They just go, oh no, we don't take it, it's policy.
It is much better than it used to be because that holographic pass signed is deemed by Scotland government and licensing laws as an acceptable form of identification.
Yep.
But when I turned 26, I got a new bus pass and I didn't realise it didn't have my birthday on it. And it was so uncool. I was just in Tesco, like in my hoodie and my sweats and hair scraped up. And I was just buying some cider. And the woman said, oh, I need your ID. And I was like, really? Anyway, gave her the ID. Oh, it's not got your birthday on it. And I didn't realise that it didn't have this holographic pass and the birthday on it. And there was this whole hoo-ha. So then I had loads of emails back and forth with the Scottish government, Young Scot, Transport Scotland. So they basically refused to provide me with this card that had my birthday on it because of my age and it was transport laws and rules. And then they said that they couldn't do it because it wasn't something they were permitted to provide. And so I just gave up.
Yeah.
And now I just kind of...
hope that you look old enough.
Yeah. But I've got a bit of a baby face, so again, I get turned down. But what are you going to do?
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Just putting a pin in Sam and Dave's conversation, as I want to ask you how you feel about accessibility at gigs and how your visual impairment might have affected your love of music. Join the conversation. Sam and David have been talking about it in the forum. We want to hear your voice on the Daily Connect. You can email us radio@rnib.org.uk, or you can find us on our social media channels. That's Twitter @RNIB Radio, or you can search RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook and send us a direct message or comment on one of our fields. If you are calling us, you can do so while the show is on. That's between 10 and 12 every weekday. Our number is 0345 602 0025. You can speak to myself or Stephen. We want to hear your thoughts on music, how your sight condition has affected it, visibility at gigs, how people have helped you or not while you've been at concerts. Let us know even the smallest detail or experience, good or bad. Now let's return to the conversation between Sam and David. In the second part of our conversation now, they will discuss how their passion for music began, the importance of shows like A Little Alternative for younger blind and partially sighted people, and some of their highlights of hosting a show on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
So the band that started my passion for music, I think it's so hard to put it in a box as to what a band, because I think my passion for music started through playing instruments. So there was the obligatory recorder when you're little.
I didn't have that. I was,
oh, did you?
Yeah, I was straight into... In fact, no, I used to be able to sing when I was like 7 or 8. And I was massively into musical theatre. I've seen Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat 4 times.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, I cannot sing for toffee, so yeah, I had to stick down the musical instrument route. And that kind of evolved into guitar, and that evolved into clarinet.
Oh,
and
wow.
And through that, I think when I was younger, I was really into Steps and Echo Seven.
I think everybody was.
All the cheesy pop bands.
Yeah.
And then as I got a bit older, I kind of discovered like Linkin Park and All Saints, and it was just like, it became really a real mixture. And then through playing the clarinet, I also discovered jazz and classical music. I think the first bands that really got me into music and I went to the gigs with the like of Foo Fighters and Muse, and then over time I still love that kind of music, but I've got a real appreciation for folk acoustic music and dance music. So many bands have influenced my passion for music over the years and the type of passion for music. So
And it constantly changes as well.
Definitely. And what about you? Is there a particular band that started your passion?
Well, I mean, I've sort of got like 3 distinct, well, maybe even 4 distinct stages of my musical adventure, if you will, to be really cheesy about it. The first one was sort of, you know, musical theatre, and that was, if you remember back in like 2007, Andrew Lloyd Webber was looking for a new Joseph.
Was that when they brought out the programme?
Yeah.
Yes.
Any dream will do. So it was through that I sort of got involved in musical theatre, and I went singing lessons, and I could sing. But, you know, eventually that just faded away with, you know, different interests and stuff like that. So for a while, music was, you know, just whatever was on.
Mm-hmm.
And what was on was Michael Bublé.
Okay.
Which, you know, I still like some of his stuff.
Oh, he's a brilliant
he's
singer.
Great.
Very charismatic, and
he
does all the old songs justice. Like, he does all the classics justice.
Yeah, not too big in his new album though. Just some of it's just cheesy. Anyway, no, and then but there was one night in I think August of 2011 when I discovered Green Day.
Oh wow!
And everything just sort of snowballed from there. So it was Green Day, My Chemical Romance, Linkin Park as well.
Yeah.
Then like stuff like Breaking Benjamin. And then it just sort of became this typical like 13, 14-year-old, oh my God, I love rock music.
Obsession.
Yeah. And then that sort of mellowed a bit. And in the past couple of years, I've got into like softer stuff, Keaton Henson, even stuff like Hozier and stuff like that that's not as heavy. Even classical stuff as well, Olafur Arnalds.
Oh my gosh. Do you know I saw Oliver Arnold in my first year of uni?
You're so lucky.
So this was 2007, so I'm really showing my age here compared to you. So there's this venue in Aberdeen called The Tunnels, really small, intimate venue. And I remember going in and there were all these signs up saying your phones must be turned off and you weren't allowed to talk. They had all these candles lit everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And you go in and there was this massive curtain up at the back.
Uh-huh.
And it had this really cool, very simple light shadow display thing going on. And he just played the piano for about an hour and a half, but then he also had all these cool loop effects.
Yeah.
And he had his laptop with all these samples he'd been working on. And I was just captivated, and I still can't believe I got to see him perform in that venue and in that way. And if you look at his success just now with is it Broadchurch,
yeah,
and then just a lot of the festival work he's been doing and collaborations, he's just absolutely fantastic.
I mean, I probably should have mentioned before that musician wise I play guitar, bass and ukulele.
I think there's definitely some genres of music which are so much fun to play and great to write. And then there's other music that I just love listening to, and there's some artists that just completely captivate you and sound great on records, sound great live.
Music in all of its shapes and forms, whether that being a massive classical piece or there's a song on a Tool album which is just a cat being squeezed. And they've just slowed it, down.
Or the John Cage's Silence. Yes, 3 minutes and 44 seconds.
Yeah, only song I can play on piano.
Sometimes I feel like when people ask you a question about music, there's that pressure to say the right thing or the cool thing or what's the right answer? And I don't think there is a right answer when it comes to music. I think that's why it's such...
Yeah, and it's okay to let your taste, take whatever. Because, I never thought when I was 14, 15 and had hair down to my shoulders that I'd be liking minimalist piano. But, I do.
Yeah, you change as life goes on.
So, Sam, we're now going to talk about the importance of a show like A Little Alternative for visually impaired people. And, you've been doing this a lot longer than I have. So, what are your thoughts on the matter?
Well, as a young visually impaired person, certainly when I was first diagnosed, which was 12 years ago, I definitely felt like a lot of the services, campaigns, all the general materials and associations with being visually impaired were targeted and geared towards older people, because unfortunately it's something that you associate with being in your sight is getting older. So I really struggled with that. So when I came across RNIB Connect Radio and I got the opportunity to get involved, it was great because I could tell my story. I could talk about what it's like trying to find a job when you're young and visually impaired. Mm-hmm. Talk about what it's like having experiences at university when you're young and visually impaired. And as you get to meet more young people like yourself, it's very liberating and very empowering. And that's what's so good about a show like A Little Alternative, because everybody loves music. You're visually impaired doesn't mean you don't love music or you can't enjoy music in the same way that a sighted person can. I think in some ways your experience is slightly different. Unfortunately, not all of us are Stevie Wonders. Sometimes the perception. I think it's just really good because hopefully young people with visual impairments will hear someone like me, hear someone like you coming on to the station, talking about what we love, making a radio show and think, oh, well, if they can do that, then I could do that. Or I could do something else that I thought maybe I didn't think I'd do. And I think that's really important in today's society to have role models. And with things like the internet and social media, it's becoming much more easier to access that. It's something I didn't have when I was 16.
Yeah.
And I think it's so great now that there's this network you can just tap into. All you have to do is just search online.
Yeah, and there's
you will find
there.
A Facebook group. You will find a Twitter group, where you will find a radio show that's hosted by a young visually impaired person like yourself.
There are young people who, once they're diagnosed, they can often look at it as a negative thing. I've had a visual impairment all my life, so I've not really...
Yeah, you don't know anything else.
I don't know anything different, which is why I can make fun of myself about it. I mean, one of my first shows, I gave myself a theme song, Enter Shikari's Myopia. And I think that's one of the things about coming to terms with these things is make fun of yourself. If you can't laugh at yourself, then...
It's going to be a very sad state of affairs. Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing, and it's not so much about laughing at yourself, it just... trying to increase people's self-awareness and just thinking, well, okay, this is what I've got to deal with. How do I get around it?
Yeah.
And hopefully listening to us talk about going to gigs or going out buying music or listening to music or, you know, just get people to think outside the box a wee bit.
Yep.
And whether it's all you've ever known or, like myself, it's something that happened later on in life. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people to go out and talk to. And that's why I love meeting other young people with visual impairment. I'm always really interested to hear about their experiences, mm-hmm. hear about the tech they use, hear about kind of how they deal with certain situations. So, yeah, so I think well done you for holding the torch and keeping the show going.
I just hope I'm doing a good job.
Yes. A Little Alternative has been going on since 2014. Mm-hmm. What would you say are your favourite moments in your short time so far?
Oh, in my short time, I mean, I'm just finished potty training as far as as far as the show goes. My favourite, there's a few. The first interview that I did was at a charity thing. I went to the Oxjam Music Festival in Glasgow, mm-hmm. and the only reason I went is because one of the bands who were playing there was my first ever band of the month, Static Union, who I became aware of because the stepdad of one of the members came and bought an old microwave. So I was interviewing them, and I'm studying journalism, so that was really my first proper interview. You know, I've done some since, and some have been slightly better, some have been slightly worse. Yeah, but
your first experience is always kind of the best one. I think that's the same for me as well. Like, I only really started interviewing people later on in the show, just from an accessibility point of view more than mm-hmm. anything. But I got to interview the lead singer of The Little Kicks, mm-hmm. who is Stephen Milne. And I've been a fan of the band for quite a while, and I kind of knew who he was. But it was so lovely to sit down and just hear it from the horse's mouth. And I think my other favourite moment was the first time that I got to go to a gig and know that I was there to review it for my radio show. I just thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And I think also when someone tweets you or likes you and says, I really enjoyed your show, or that's such a cool playlist. Like, well. Mm-hmm. It's just knowing that somebody actually listened, enjoyed my choice of songs, I just think that's really nice when people engage and let you know how they feel about your music, because I got a lot of enjoyment out of compiling the list. But it's not just yourself you're doing it for; you're doing it for the listeners as well.
Also, like, more behind the scenes to drag your listeners kicking and screaming behind the Little Alternative curtain. And I don't know if you've ever heard this, but any songs that've got swearing in it, Chris, our fantastic producer, will just reverse whatever the swearing is. And for one song that we did, Another Night on Mars by The Main, when reversed, it sounded like Every Night in Swedish Bars. So now whenever that song's played, we just refer to it as Swedish Bars.
The trials and tribulation of Watershed.
I know, it's
Wonderful moments for both of us, I think, throughout our time on the show. Over the 150 shows.
Yes, it's a long time.
Well, thank you very much, RNIB Connect Radio.
Yes.
And thank you to you listeners.
For, you know, keeping listening to us. So, Sam, that's been 150th episodes of A Little Alternative. Here's to 150 more.
Here, here.
Woohoo.
Cool. Fab. That was good fun.
We'd love you to join in the conversation. If you would like to tell us about how you feel about the subjects we've covered today, then please tweet us at RNIB Radio or email radio@rnib.org.uk. Or you can even get in touch with us by our fully accessible website, rnibconnectradio.org.uk.
And listen to A Little Alternative every Friday night at 9 p.m. or Saturdays at 7 p.m. If you miss an episode, you can listen again on our website, rnibconnectradio.org.uk, hosted by both of us.
And as Sam said there, you can hear A Little Alternative every Friday night at 9 p.m. or Saturdays at 7 on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Last week on The Daily Connect, our news review guests were Georgie Morrell and Simon Pauly. And one of the things we discussed was accessibility at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Is it right that it's only 50% accessible? Can more even be done to raise this percentage? Well, recent contributor, Daily Connect listener and playwright of Libby's Eyes, Amy Bethan Evans, has been in touch with us on The Daily Connect to personally describe her experiences of this year's Fringe.
Hiya, I'm Amy Bethan Evans. I'm a playwright, and this year I was in Edinburgh on the Emerging Producers Development Programme, And it was a really good experience. And I really learned a lot about producing and the confidence to produce my own work. And I got onto it because they reached out to disabled people to get them to come, which was all very lovely. But the access of the Fringe does need improving quite a bit. I was allowed to bring my friend with me as an access worker. It was the first proper access gig he'd done. I think his eyes were opened quite a lot to the things that I face every day. And I think that's probably what helped set me off, really, because he didn't take the things for granted that I did. For example, one venue told us that we should have phoned them. We told them that we'd phoned the Fringe access line, but they said that we should phone them as well. I'm not entirely sure why I should make two phone calls. Another venue sat me in the wheelchair platform, and we had to ring up and sort them out to get us at the front. And they tried to get out of sitting us at the front by saying that the front was full, but I put my foot down and said that they'd messed that up and I needed to sit at the front and they should just explain that when they move people. And, you know, when things like that happen, it doesn't feel good because it feels like you're causing trouble. It feels like you're not being a very nice person. But it's either that or not get the same experience that you've paid for and that you deserve. There's another venue which said that we could come in for early access, but when we asked could we nip to the loo beforehand, said that we couldn't because they had to open the doors and they couldn't reserve our seats. So let it be known that you can't be disabled and have a wee. I did a lot of ranting about this on Twitter, and I did a lot of ranting about this in a workshop about demystifying access that I attended. And eventually the Fringe did, there was somebody from the Fringe there that I have had a meeting with them, and hopefully they've taken things on board to improve next year. And I guess I would say to other disabled people traveling to the Fringe that, you know, it shouldn't just be up to us to make noise, and you should get your non-disabled friends to make noise on your behalf. I think the whole nature of a Fringe festival probably isn't super accessible, but they are working on it. They do want to do it. And I think, you know, we just need to make some noise if we feel confident enough to do that. And I really want to bring my accessible play Libby's Eyes to the Edinburgh Fringe at some point, but I really want to be able to get a disabled audience to it. So it's really in my interest to help improve that. It's not, I mean, yeah, no, I haven't really had any better experiences, to be honest. But I think this is the first time I've actually been as a professional and known what I wanted to see. Whereas when I've been before, it's tend to be as a student. And or like with friends, so I just kind of stick with them and go along to whatever, or stick in the venue that my show is at. But, you know, but actually going as an industry professional, there are specific shows I want to see for specific reasons. And, you know, so yeah, I need to travel across it more, and I need to book into venues more, and I need to do that off my own bat. And I need to be the decision maker about what I'm watching. I mean, my vision would be for all the venues to have one accessible room that all the shows tour to. For example, if your venue is Summer Hall, have somewhere that's accessible outside Summer Hall, and all the shows do one performance there. And then wheelchair users can go there, and they don't even have to move. And just because something isn't wheelchair accessible doesn't mean it can't be audio described, doesn't mean it can't be BSL interpreted or captioned. You know, there's so many ways to make something accessible, and just because you've got an old building doesn't mean that isn't a get out for you. And I think as well, it's, you know, it's giving people the confidence to know that this experience is for them, and that there are people that don't have to think about these things. They shouldn't have to think about them either. I think for me, my journey as a partially sighted person, you know, like I never used to use audio description because I've always been partially sighted. And in my opinion, I can see because I don't know any different. And the difference I see with me is that if I wanted to, I could go to a show and sit at the back. That would not prevent me watching the show. It would mean that I wouldn't be able to enjoy the show as much as everyone else. And it would mean that I would have paid the same price for the show as everyone else, without getting the same experience. And that is what I'm not standing for anymore. But it's taken me quite a long time to get to that stage and to actually expect that experience. I think, you know, like, because access is so often presented as a burden, we don't often think to ask for it because we think we're being a nuisance. I just want to thank everyone at the Edinburgh Fringe and beyond who did listen to me and who didn't try to say that it wasn't their problem and did set up meetings with me and did promise to improve next year. It means a lot to do that, and it takes a lot to do that. And if you do get called out on access, you know, it's not people trying to be nasty to you. It's just people trying to help you improve. So thank you to all the people that received that and weren't defensive. You can get in touch with me at Amy Bethan Evans, or one word. So I think social media, you know, a lot of non-disabled people say that it's a terrible thing. But I think, you know, it's been an incredibly liberating experience for people like myself that find it difficult to go out. It's been a really good platform to put my voice on. You know, and I've loved it ever since it came out when I was 19. And, you know, so I think that it inspired me once I figured out how it could be used. And also, I think for me as well, like when you're a playwright, when you're an artist, you have to find what your voice is. You have to find what your niche is. And it was when I wrote Libby's Eyes. I'd written so many plays before, but Libby's Eyes was the play that actually made people sit up and take notice of me, because it was doing something that they hadn't heard before. And I thought, right, well, if I'm a playwright because I want to achieve social justice, this is clearly the social justice that people aren't hearing and want to listen to. So I guess there was part of me establishing my voice in that, but also, you know, part of me looking at the things that have held me back and thinking that I'm realizing that they shouldn't have held me back, and that there is a way that I can make things better for others.
Thanks very much to Amy Bethan Evans for getting in touch with us here at The Daily Connect. It is the voice of the blind and partially sighted community, and we want to add your voice to the discussion. Find us on social media at RNIB Radio, or search for RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook. You can also email us radio@rnib.org.uk or call us on 0345 602 0025.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
You are listening to The Daily Connect here on RNIB Connect Radio, and it's almost time to say goodbye. But before we do, it's that time once again for something for the weekend.
The Daily Connect.
And joining me once again on Something for the Weekend is my very special guest, the Early Editions, Alan Russell. Alan, how are you doing?
Yes, good morning. I've still not managed to get out of the studio yet.
Yeah, we've kept you locked in here, but it's almost afternoon, Alan. Shake those morning blues, grab yourself a coffee, and let's enjoy Something for the Weekend.
I'm in here at 7 a.m, grab yourself a coffee, you're preaching to the choir.
All right, before we fall asleep on the mic, tell us what's happening in the cinema this weekend.
Yeah, I got lots to talk about today, so let's go straight to the movies on the big screen. We're going to start off with Yardie. Now, this is a film that I haven't heard of. Now, it's directed by actor Idris Elba. You know, he's one of the guys who's been touted as Bond.
Touted himself as Bond, if I
understand.
Yeah, fair play.
Fair play. Well, he's having a go at directing this time. So tell me a little bit about the film then. So before D, who's the main character in this, can be convinced to abandon his life of crime and follow the righteous path, he encounters the man who shot his brother 10 years earlier. And as you'd expect, he embarks on a bloody, explosive quest for retribution. And it's a quest that brings him into conflict with vicious London gangsters.
When I was a boy, my brother would always ask me, which way you're gonna go? Will you go with the righteous or will you go with the damned? This is a story about the path I chose.
I come here for change my life. To get away from Kingston.
Look at yourself. The grief never left you.
You're still like a mad dog.
Now your brother getting shot down like that. Ancient history.
Oh, it seems a darker exploration for Idris Elba there. I know that he wrote a comedy show for Sky Television, but this one definitely looks like he's gone down a darker route. Excited for it, Alan?
Yeah, I mean, I'd give it a go, see what it's like. I mean, the subject matter sounds pretty good. So, you know, you've got the Yardies in there, of course, the kind of, you know, Caribbean gangs, and you've got the gangsters in London. I mean, you know, I'd have thought it'd been a Guy Ritchie one written all over that, but there you go.
Maybe Idris decided that he was the man taking over. Okay, so we have another screening, so to say, in Something for the Weekend today.
We do indeed. So let's take a look at Searching. So this stars John Cho. You'll be familiar with him if you're a sci-fi fan, because he plays Chris.
He plays Commander Sulu, Lieutenant Commander Sulu, in the rebooted Star Trek series.
He does indeed. Bit of a change of tack in this one, though. After his 16-year-old daughter goes missing, a desperate father breaks into her laptop to look for some clues to find her.
Hey, Margot.
Dad again.
Why did you leave your laptop at home?
I haven't been able to reach Margot.
Wait, you can't find Margot?
The study group only went till 9.
She said it was going all night.
No, she definitely left at 9.
Authorities are asking anyone with information to please call the hotline or 911 immediately.
Update me whenever you learn something.
Did she mention anything unusual going on lately?
We're not really that close.
Did you guys are friends?
Kind of.
She has friends, right? She keeps to herself a lot.
She's quiet.
I did see her eat lunch alone.
On Thursday?
Every day.
She made an outgoing transaction of $2,500.
Margot picked up an ID a few days ago.
That doesn't make any sense.
It's time to start considering that Margot ran away.
I know my daughter. She did not run away.
This is it. Best place in the world to do nothing.
This is her keychain.
You told me she ran away!
Another dark and foreboding looking film there. Alan, I spotted that in that audio clip there. We had some Deborah Messing from Will and Grace fame. So it looks like she's following John Cho down the dark route. But definitely they look interesting. They're certainly an antidote from all the fluffy Ant-Man and the Wasp type films we've had in the cinema lately. So something a bit more gritty.
Indeed, they certainly are. And just talking to the Marvel and DC stuff, they've been grossing the biggest cinema takings so far this year, or this summer anyway.
Of course, yeah. Well, I think Marvel is a unstoppable force at the moment. Not even the might of Superman and Batman in the DC universe can stop Marvel. All right, Alan, enough of this lowbrow nonsense. Let's move out of the cinema and let's check out what's happening in the theatre.
Indeed we shall. I'll tell Idris Elba you said his film was lowbrow. Oh, you'll pay for that. Right, okay, well, you set the bar high there looking for the theatre. So let's have some Shakespeare. I've seen a few Shakespeare plays down at the RSC in Stratford-upon-Avon, you know, the home of Shakespeare. And the audio description is just fabulous. It will blow your mind. And I wasn't a huge Shakespeare fan, but loving them. I've been to see a few now. But let's look, first of all, at Othello. This one is being performed at Shakespeare's Globe in London on Saturday the 1st, so that's tomorrow. Audio describes, of course, starts at 2 o'clock. And if you want to take part in the touch tour, which I highly recommend, that starts at 11. You get on stage, you kind of go around the set, you get to handle some of the props. You don't get to handle the stars, but they sometimes do come out.
You do get to handle the swords, though, Alan.
Yeah, well, actually, when I was down seeing Hamlet for the first time at Stratford, you got into the actual workshops as well. And the armour, the weapons, the swords, as you say, they're all real, you know, steel, metal. You know, none of this plastic or paper mache or cardboard stuff. It's the real deal with the RSC.
I suppose they can't fall apart during a crucial fight. But I would be a bit concerned if I was one of the actors.
You wouldn't want to hit with that.
Not at all. Now, speaking of which, who is the talent that's in Othello at the Shakespeare Globe this weekend?
Okay, well, we've got Andre Hond, who plays Othello. He's best known for his roles in the Academy Award-winning films Moonlight and Selma. And Mr. Cinema will tell us about those.
Well, Moonlight, of course, did not win the Oscar.
But it didn't.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate because Moonlight is a cracking film. But all that anyone will ever mention when it comes up is the fact that it did win the Oscar, but didn't first of all, as the Oscar went to La La Land.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's find out who else is in the show with him. Now, you've got Mark Rylance, who plays Iago. So he's currently starring in the Globes production of Farinelli and the King on Broadway, no less. So very experienced actor there. Originally produced under Dominic Drongo's tenure as artistic director. So a couple there. I've seen Othello, so I can recommend that. Hamlet's a good one as well. I was hoping to see, I'll say, the Scottish play.
Okay, well, let's not jinx anybody.
No. And it came round this year, and I was so excited. The audio described shows on the day of my sister's 40th birthday.
Oh.
And I couldn't go.
Was she upset that you missed it?
No. I had to be there. It was like one of those three-line whips in Parliament.
Well, I'll tell you about something that might have happened to you had you missed your sister's birthday. But the last time I went to see Shakespeare, down in London again, I'd gone to see Martin Freeman's Richard III. And as we entered the theatre, we spotted the first two rows had sort of waterproof coats.
Oh, yeah.
Over the chairs. We were in the third row. And someone just in front of us in the second row turned around and said, just be prepared for this show. You will get splashed with blood. And she wasn't joking. It was a gruesome version of the play. The entire first two rows were drenched in blood. And I must say, even in the non-splash zone of the third row, we got quite a lot of it on ourselves as well. Wow. So a very gruesome Richard III from Martin Freeman there. But that was my last experience of Shakespeare. Now, from something that felt like it had gone wrong, but to the play that does go wrong.
It does indeed, in dramatic style. It's the play that goes wrong. That is the title. That's playing at the Theatre Royal in Brighton. Again, that's tomorrow, Saturday, the 1st of September at 2:30 p.m. Touch Tour takes place at 12:40 p.m. Please, if you can, you're going for the AD, go to the Touch Tour. Fawlty Tower meets Noises Off in this multi-award-winning smash hit comedy. The Cornley Polytechnic Drama Society are putting on a 1920s murder mystery. A bit like your RSC you went to. But as the title suggests, everything that can go wrong does go wrong as the accident-prone thespians battle to reach their final curtain.
Sounds fantastic. And both of these plays, the audio description is provided by a company you know rather well, Vocalise.
Indeed, they're one of probably the biggest providers of audio description, you know, not just at theatres, galleries, museums, visitor attractions, you know, open house weekend. If you go to those in London, you'll catch Vocalise guys giving audio described tours. So yeah, you'll be in for a treat. And as I say, I can't emphasise enough, go to the onstage, but go to the Touch Tour, because when I went to see Hamlet, you sometimes get to meet the actors, not always, but sometimes do, and I was just like so lucky. I met David Tennant, Sir Patrick Stewart, and Sir Ian McKellen.
Now, I'll tell you, Alan, if my wife is listening at home, you've just made her very, very jealous, not because of young and handsome strapping David Tennant, but because of Sir Patrick Stewart. She's such a big fan of him that when we last played the Game of Life, when we hit the married spot, she selected Sir Patrick Stewart to be her next husband. So you'll be making her very jealous this Friday morning. Thanks for your rundown of the theatre with audio description this weekend, Alan. But let's move to something that I can identify with after my Richard III experience. It is the musical equivalent of being drenched in a bucket of blood.
Yeah, this one, really, if you're an Alice Cooper fan, or even if you haven't, you'll try it out, but if you're an Alice Cooper fan, you will know what to expect. You know, he's famous for his dramatic endings when he does stage tours. So it's a paranormal evening at the Olympia in Paris. It's a live album full of music, murder and madness. The showman Alice Cooper himself fascinates with a passionate performance, and together with his band easily turns the whole concert into an unforgettable happening. So you've got an enthusiastic crowd along with stunning guitar and drum solos. The guitars are phenomenal, by the way. Along with the vibrating energy, it makes it a fantastic not-to-miss evening. And of course, it's caught in high-quality audio as well.
Brand new CD released this weekend on vinyl as well. Looking forward to that one. Okay, Alan, we are checking out sport before we leave something for the weekend, and I know that one is very close to your heart. In fact, that's where you're heading tomorrow.
Yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to be taking to the water with the World Blind Match Racing Championships. There's a name for a sport. You get blind racers taking part here on the water, and the world governing body of the sport has chosen the Royal Northern and Clyde Yacht Club in Scotland to host this year's championships. They take place in Helensburgh from the 1st until the 7th of September, and you'll have the world's top visually impaired sailors from around the world travelling to the club to compete. So coming from the likes of the USA, you get Canada, Australia, the Team GB guys will be there, of course, as well. And it's single racer, so it's just one person in the boat, in these little dinghies, racing on the water. And they use a whole load of audio cues in their ears through little earpieces that tell them where they are, where the wind is, the direction, where the buoys are they've got to go around, where the competitors are that they're racing against as well. And, you know, I use screen readers and things because I can't see the screen, so there's lots of things. And I've done sailing before with an audio compass only. You know, that was complicated enough. But these guys are listening to so many different sounds and tones all at the same time, and they can paint this picture of what's on the water, and it blew my mind having a listen to it.
Sounds incredible. I presume, Alan, that we can expect to hear some audio from the event over the course of the early edition and indeed all shows across RNIB Connect Radio next week.
Yeah, we'll catch up with the sailors, the organisers. It's on for the whole week, and give you a bit of a flavour. I just hope it's not raining.
Now, staying with sport, and there's a big event taking place on Sunday, probably the only game in Scottish football that is as popular worldwide as most of the games in the English Premier League.
Absolutely is. It's the Scottish Old Firm. Rangers will face Celtic in the first Old Firm game of the season. It's a biggie this Sunday at Celtic Park. You can catch the game on Sky Sports or on Radio Scotland. Build-up starts at 11 a.m. with the kick-off at 12 o'clock. It's going to be at Celtic Park, so you're looking at 60-odd thousand fans there. You've got Steven Gerrard taking charge of Rangers for the first time in an Old Firm game. You've got Brendan Rodgers worried on the Celtic side about his main striker, Moussa Dembele, who's had some interest from Lyon, some transfer in there. He's not sure he can even play Dembele on the Sunday as well. So lots of headaches for the guys as well. But, you know, it's a massive event. And as you say, Chris, around the globe, it's just watched by tens of millions of people.
It's going to be electric. Thanks, Alan, for something for the weekend.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
And that's it for another week of Daily Connect Podcasts. Thank you so much for joining me. There will be a brand new Daily Connect podcast on Monday just after 5 p.m. And you can, of course, listen to the show live on RNIB Connect Radio every weekday from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you once more on the Daily Connect.
The Daily Connect Podcast.